This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Broadband Over Powerline World. We're about to talk to Ed Hare, who's laboratory manager at the ARRL Laboratories. Welcome to Broadband Over Powerline World.
Well, thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure to be able to be one of the many people you've interviewed lately.
Yes, thanks. Why don't we start with just a brief word about your personal and professional involvement in amateur radio?
Okay, I supervise and manage the ARRL Laboratory here.
Okay.
Here
is where?
In Newington, Connecticut, sorry.
Which is about where? For people who know where Hartford and Newington
are. Pretty close to Hartford. We're about 10 miles south west of Hartford.
Okay. And tell us what ARRL is.
Yeah, ARRL is the National Organization for Amateur Radio. Last time I counted, about 160,000 members. I think Dave had some more accurate figures when you interviewed Dave Sumner.
Right.
And
what proportion of all ham radio operators are in ARRL? Is it essentially the same thing, or are there a lot of people outside of the fold, or how does that work?
Yeah, I'm not really familiar with the actual member amateur radio statistics. Here in the laboratory, of course, we pay more attention to the technical issues.
Right.
Probably roughly 20-25% of licensed amateurs are members of the ARRL.
So extrapolating, how many amateur radio operators would you say are there in the United States?
I'm not sure. Hold on just a second.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have that information right at my fingertips.
But you're saying you have 160,000 members.
That's approximately, yes, sir.
And that's about a fifth of the population.
Yes, sir.
So that's about 800,000 people, 800,000 stations.
That's a little high, I think.
Okay. But it's in the hundreds of thousands.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Now, from where you're sitting, has the AARL formally asked the FCC to do anything, either generally or in specific instances, about RF interference generated by broadband over power line systems or tests?
Absolutely. In fact, that was addressed probably on two basic levels, one of which was through the FCC rulemaking process.
Right.
Our petitions to the commission asked for a number of things that we thought would better protect amateur radio, ranging from things like a reduction in the emissions limits from where they are now to some fairly specific levels that we thought would prevent most, but certainly not all, cases of harmful interference.
And what was the response of the FCC to your input to their rulemaking?
Well, what the FCC ended up doing by my looking at the final rules is they left the present emissions limits as is. They emphasized to quite an extent in their report and order on the rulemaking that resolution of interference was an important part of the success of BPL, and they expected that their present rules that require that any unlicensed device that causes harmful interference must correct that interference under the past and present FCC rules.
Okay, now let's delve a little into your specialty. Explain to in a way that novices will understand and that experts won't be offended what the physical process is by which the creation of broadband connectivity through power lines generates radio interference that can annoy and destroy the activities of amateur radio operators.
Well, the starting point to answer that question is that broadband over power line, or any broadband system, ends up using a fair amount of radio spectrum as a part of its operation. In other words, you can't send high-speed digital signals without taking up some amount of spectrum or bandwidth to do it. When you put those signals onto conductors, such as overhead power lines, for example, those signals can and will radiate to the point where they can be picked up by nearby receivers.
Does that differ from the situation with DSL over phone lines or cable modem systems over cables?
In some ways, those systems also have some potential to radiate signals, although with DSL or say cable television modems, the conductors that are used, twisted pair telephone wiring or coaxial cable, are designed to act as transmission lines. In other words, they're specifically designed to get a signal from point A to point B without losing too much of it by radiation or without picking up a whole lot of noise in the process.
So their purpose being to transmit information, they're designed and engineered and built and operated in ways that don't that are designed not to give off too much of this interference.
That's correct. Although there are, of course, problems with cable plants or with telephone wiring where you will get some leakage from those systems. But in ARRL's experience, that's generally a fairly localized phenomenon. In other words, with a cable system, you might have a ring crack or other problem that results in some leakage locally to that defect, but the majority of the plant does not radiate at that maximum emissions level.
Okay, now how does that differ then with sending broadband internet signals over power lines?
Well, the broadband over power line wiring, of course, can be those overhead electrical lines that you'll see often as you drive down the street.
Right.
And their physical configuration and the spacing of the wires and the relatively poor balance at radio frequencies results in their acting as reasonably efficient antennas. Much of the signals that are put onto those wires will be radiated rather than delivered to the modem at the other end.
Now, would it be as simple as putting shielding around those wires that would defeat that interference generation?
Well, I don't see that as being a practical solution.
Because
to shield those overhead wires that are out there already would be virtually impossible.
Now, that's because they're designed and engineered and built and operated to send electricity to homes and businesses.
Yes, that's exactly what their intended use are. When those were designed sometimes decades ago, no one gave much thought to the idea that, well, you might want them to someday carry very high-speed radio or digital signals.
Okay. So, and the retrofitting of them in a way that would allow them to be protected in the way that cable or DSL is would be prohibitively expensive or technically unfeasible or both?
Well, I'd say prohibitively expensive. Technically unfeasible, almost anything can be accomplished if you're willing to throw enough dollars at it.
Okay.
But that would defeat, of course, the entire premise behind BPL, which is to use existing wiring to deliver signals.
Okay. Now, does what we've just discussed in the last few minutes mean that it's intrinsically impossible to use power lines to distribute internet connectivity in a way that doesn't generate harmful interference?
In my experience, having been to, at this point, 8 different BPL systems, BPL, in order to function, needs to operate at a higher level than the present noise levels on the lines that it's using. And, of course, that present noise level is determined by all of the computers that are connected to the line, putting their own noise on the line, every vacuum cleaner motor, every minor power line leak that might occur from a defective insulator on the overhead lines contributes to the noise on the line. Well, when you start putting BPL on those lines, you have to put it on at a greater level than the present levels of noise that are there right now.
So, in a sense, there's already a din going on, and if you want to be heard over it, you've got to be even louder.
Well, I'd say there's already a babble going on.
Right.
I mean, the noise that's on the lines right now has obviously been at a low enough level where, for the most part, radio services can live with it. It's certainly more noisy, sometimes by perhaps a factor of 10, 100, or even 1,000, than it would be if there was no electrical devices at all connected to the lines.
Right.
Right now, we've achieved a reasonable balance between the needs of radio services and the needs not to have computers designed to, Tempest standards where they put absolutely no noise on the line.
Right.
And that sort of thing. When you start talking broadband over power line, by definition it has to operate at a higher level. And by definition at the FCC limits, any spectrum that BPL is using locally, if it's operating at the present FCC limits, will cause interference to receivers nearby that are tuned to that spectrum.
And if it operates at a lower level, it's not going to be any use as a way of distributing internet.
Well, they could probably operate it at a somewhat lower level than perhaps the FCC limits are right now, but there's certainly a low end to that because you have to operate this at a greater level than the existing noise levels.
Okay. Now, why don't you address the issue that some criticisms that have been leveled at amateur radio operators by people who are strong supporters or investors in BPL, the first of which is that the amateur radio operators are anti-technology and they're opposed to the widespread availability of broadband internet connectivity.
Oh, absolutely untrue. In fact, ARRL, for example, we have a web page. We have a web page that has a broadband connection. Many amateurs are doing the same. Many amateurs are operating with some of the newer technology. There's an ARRL-sponsored high-speed multimedia working group that is developing ways for amateur radio to make use of some of the 802.11 devices as part of what we do with radio. So
in no way it would be possible to say legitimately that amateur radio operators are anti-technology.
Well, of course not. In fact, it's technology that attracts most of us, or many of us, to the hobby in the first place. It certainly applies to me. And over the years, ARRL has actually worked fairly closely with some of the competitors of BPL to try to both assess the interference potential from other types of broadband and, where appropriate, to work with that industry cooperatively to help them develop standards that will have a minimal interference potential. For example, several years back when the HomePlug Consortium was developing the HomePlug standard, which is actually a form of BPL, by the way,
right.
ARRL and HomePlug did joint testing, which helped persuade them that they were not going to use amateur spectrum in their product, and they hardwired in some notches to eliminate their use of amateur spectrum altogether.
And so now people who want to use HomePlug, which is, as you said, essentially BPL inside of a building, doesn't cause problems for amateur radio operators?
Certainly not major problems. You know, one of our goals in helping the industry develop some of these standards and other techniques to deal with interference is to reduce the likelihood of interference to a point where, yeah, it still might happen, but it'll happen infrequently enough where it's actually possible and practical to try to deal with it on a case-by-case basis.
Okay, now you were talking about essentially hardwiring notching into specifications, the ones that HomePlug uses, to avoid problems with amateur radio operators. In all the discussions I've had with everyone on this issue, everyone talks about notching. Tell us what notching is, what it can do, and what it can't do in solving this problem.
Well, notching is the term that the industry has come up with. It basically means we are going to turn off any of our signals in a particular piece of spectrum or block of spectrum. So they might operate, for example, between 3 and 15 megahertz, just to pull some numbers out of thin air. But at 3.5 megahertz, they will start turning off their carriers, not transmit at all between 3.5 and 4 megahertz, for example. That's one of the amateur bands. And then resume transmitting at a higher frequency and do the same thing for the next amateur band.
Now, would it be possible then to do that, to essentially solve this problem by extensive notching, by letting the BPL operators in each area know what spectrum is being used by the amateur radio operators there, and have them notch that out, and then there wouldn't be any problem?
To a point. I mean, that's certainly a step in the right direction. The problem that we've seen with notching is that in practice they're able to achieve a notching level of about 30 dB. To put that into layman's terms, that's a power factor of 1,000. So the amount of signal that they'll transmit inside the amateur bands, if they were notching the ham bands, would be 30 dB less than it is outside the amateur bands.
But they can't cut it out entirely.
Exactly. And although the more you cut it out, the less likely you are to cause interference. Now, if I'm in a rural area where I have 300 feet between houses, my house may be set back, you know, 300 feet from the power line.
Right.
If they, under those circumstances, were to notch by 30 dB, maybe that's enough. If I was in an apartment building with an amateur station, and there are many amateurs that do that, and that BPL system were located on the wiring on the other side of the wall from me, well, 30 dB might not be enough. ARRL had put some numbers on the plate, I believe, where we'd suggested that if the industry is able to notch by 40 dB, that would probably take care of a good portion of the possible interference cases.
Okay, what has their response been to saying that you'd like them to notch by 40 dB?
I've talked to some of the BPL manufacturers, and unfortunately, with the present technology, the best they can achieve is about 30 dB. The FCC had released a series of measurements where they typically measured about 24 decibels of notching, which is going to fall a little bit shy of that necessary to really cut back on the number of interference cases.
So you're saying that if they could do it do 40 decibels, that it would be okay, but they're only doing 24.
If they could do 40 decibels, that would take care of most cases of interference. Understand that under the rules, even if interference were unlikely, I mean, I could give you examples where a very quiet rural location where you don't have a lot of devices generating that noise I discussed earlier, could well require 50 dB of notching in order to not interfere at all with amateur radio. Well, even if interference were unlikely because of notching, when it does occur, the rules require that it be addressed.
Okay.
So you can't say, well, it's not likely, so it's only happening a few times. We can just ignore those people because the rules say that harmful interference must be corrected by the operator of any unlicensed device.
Okay, one more technical point before we get into administrative issues. Is the matter of being able to do greater notching a matter of redesigning or upgrading the quality of the equipment, and could that be done if money, say, were thrown at that?
I think so. If you were to notch to whatever degree might be necessary, of course, the equipment might be somewhat more expensive than it is right now.
Right.
We may need to wait for some improvements in technology to get even farther. And, of course, there's always the possibility of adding some additional what I would call hard or analog filters outside of just turning off the carriers, where you actually filter out some of the unwanted signals.
So what I'm trying to focus on and trying to the big question I'm trying to answer here is, are there technological fixes to this technological problem? And if the business proposition allowed for it and the equipment manufacturers and the BPL operators went for it, could BPL, which is touted as a third wire and a big solution and a big help, could that be made to work in a way that wouldn't interfere with the operations of amateur radio operators?
Of amateur radio operators, if the notching were sufficient to protect individual stations, yes, that's correct. It could be made to work. Of course, I have to point out a couple of things. Amateur radio is not the only user of spectrum.
Okay, talk about users other than amateur radio operators that are affected by BPL-generated RF interference.
Well, we can talk about those other users by looking at what the FCC and the NTIA put on the plate in the rulemaking itself.
National Telecommunications and Information Agency?
Yes, that's the one.
Okay.
And they had, if I'm recalling the number correctly, they require that 13 different band segments not be used by BPL at all to protect some sensitive life and safety services, high-frequency or shortwave aeronautical and important things like that.
And what do you know about your counterparts over in those areas and whether they've been having similar problems and whether they've been complaining as well?
I don't believe they've been complaining. If you look right now at the present deployment of broadband over power line, there's probably maybe 20 to 25 systems that are in operation at this time, many of which are fairly small. I mean, I know of some where you have two or three users connected to that system, and if there's none of those sensitive users operating in that area at that time, they're not going to be seeing interference.
So in fact, though, but all of the problems and controversy that's been generated so far has been generated by very small tests using with very few customers, and the promise, of course, of BPL is that it'll be available to everyone. Therefore, the attention that's being given to mitigating these issues now would have to be multiplied 100 or 1,000-fold in order to mitigate it when the system was rolled out, wouldn't it?
I would generally agree with that, although there are some systems right now that are beginning to do some serious rollout. I know the Synergy utility in the Ohio area is, I believe at this point, probably passing about 15,000 homes. I've often seen the quote that they have 15,000 customers. I think that that's homes passed, not necessarily the number of customers.
Okay. Let's talk a little about the FCC and what we were talking about a few minutes ago in terms of the enforcement of the FCC's rules. Now, review for us again what the FCC has said in its report and order that the BPL operators are responsible for obeying.
Yeah, well, the report and order did a number of things, and I think Bruce Franca of the FCC gave a pretty thorough interview, I think it was yesterday.
Yes, yesterday.
Where he discussed a lot of the rulemaking issues, and I would defer to Bruce. He's a fairly knowledgeable fellow indeed.
Right. Well,
they set absolute limits for emissions. In other words, they said you must not exceed these particular emissions levels from broadband over power lines.
And what happens when they are exceeded, and who's responsible for seeing that be dealt with?
Well, if they're exceeding the FCC's rules, ultimately the FCC would be responsible for identifying emissions violations and taking the appropriate action with respect to asking the BPL company to correct them, or if they chose to, they could just immediately go right to issuing a fine, although they generally don't. They try to let people work out their problems to the extent that they can. They will give people an opportunity to correct inadvertent errors.
Okay, let's talk exactly about that, and then maybe move on to some of the other locales where this is involved. In the interview yesterday with Mr. Francer at FCC, I focused on the Briarcliff Manor rollout, which is involving Ambient and Con Ed, and he said that the parties are working towards a self-negotiated solution. Is that your view of the situation in Briarcliff Manor, New York?
Oh, well, I know at one point they were working toward a solution. In fact, they had made changes to that system that did indeed reduce the amount of interference. Where we seem to have reached an impasse was the fact that they were telling the FCC that they had corrected all of the interference in Briarcliff Manor. I would go down there and find moderately strong interference in one portion of town, moderately strong interference in another portion of town, and that went back and forth several times. What actually, I think, helped prompt the recent ARRL filing was we were down there. I was down there with another amateur who was making a video for an e-zine he's putting together. He wanted to get some documentation of some of the BPL in various cities. And we went to Briarcliff Manor, and by coincidence, we ran across some of the Ambient staff there in Briarcliff Manor. And they started off saying, well, do you like what you're seeing here? And my answer was, well, not really. We're still seeing some interference. I asked them, how about you take a 10-minute ride with me and I'll show you what we're finding, and they chose not to do it. That's not my idea of cooperation.
Is that the session that's that you've recently made a videotape of?
Yes.
Okay, and with your permission, we're going to link to that, to the URL that has that clip.
Yeah, and that particular clip that I emailed you a little bit earlier shows what we found along one of the roads there in Briarcliff Manor. This is really one of the major thoroughfares through the relatively small village.
And when was that tape made and that those tests run?
That was about a month ago, maybe December, mid-December is best I can remember.
Okay, now since then, has ARRL filed an official complaint?
Yes, we did. Relatively soon thereafter, we sent the FCC yet another letter pointing out that the interference problems in Briarcliff Manor were not resolved, and we're asking them to deal with this more effectively.
And have they responded to that submission?
To my knowledge, not yet, but that was done by Chris Imlay, our attorney down in the Washington area.
Okay.
And my knowledge, they haven't responded directly or taken any specific action.
So, and I essentially tried to pin their spokesperson down yesterday and ask them what kind of action they were going to take, and he essentially said that the parties are working it out but amongst themselves.
Well, I would certainly hope so. If they could work this out to the point where it no longer caused interference to amateur radio, I'd be very pleased. So far, this particular system, I think it's been up and running for a couple of years. Some of these interference problems are just about that old. It's kind of hard to know when they've done all that they can, and they could well be at that point right now.
And if they've done all that they can or are willing to, and the FCC continues to say that the parties are working it out, what will ARRL do then?
Well, I'm not sure. That's one of those decisions that will be made well up my food chain here.
Okay. But, all right. Say a little bit about the city's other installations, deployments other than Briarcliff Manor that you have some experience with and what the situation there is now.
Well, it could take us a while to run through the list. Let me run through perhaps the list of cities that I've been to.
Okay.
Briarcliff Manor, New York, Cottonwood, Arizona, the Allentown area in Pennsylvania, Manassas, Virginia, Potomac, Maryland, Irving, Texas, Rochester, Minnesota, and Agawam, Massachusetts. That's my favorite. It's the closest.
Okay. Why don't you say something about the general trends and then any specific instances that seem particularly noteworthy?
Yeah, and what I'm seeing in these cities, of course, is many of them are using several different types of broadband over power lines, so they're not all exactly the same. And we're seeing some that are notching amateur spectrum to one degree or another. None of them are notching all amateur spectrum. Even in some cases, for example, I've been to one city where the interference levels there are low enough where I don't believe in that small trial they're causing harmful interference to amateur radio.
Which places are those?
That's the one up in Agawam, Massachusetts.
Right.
But on the same token, the same manufacturer, and I'm intentionally not naming manufacturers
That's fine.
In some of this discussion.
Right.
The same manufacturer in other systems is causing quite a bit of interference to amateur radio.
Well, the manufacturer's not. You mean equipment made by the same manufacturer.
Yes.
So does that mean that the problem is not in the equipment, but in the way it's being fine-tuned or set up by the operators?
Possibly, although in both cases, the manufacturers are very heavily involved with that setting up and fine-tuning. And of course, we're trying to work with the manufacturers the same way as we have worked with some of their competitors over the years. I know with the VDSL industry, where they were developing standards for higher speed DSL. We've worked with them cooperatively the same way we work with Homeplug. Same thing with the Home Phone Networking Alliance. We've done some cooperative work with them over the years. So, I think ultimately the success of broadband over power line will depend upon whether it's able to work cooperatively with radio users the way some of their competitors have.
Okay, and you're saying in the cases where the competitors have worked with the radio operators, things have been resolved pretty successfully?
Well, so far we don't have widespread reports of interference from DSL. We don't have widespread reports of interference from Homeplug devices, although I will point out that one of the companies is using Homeplug as a major part of its system. And, of course, its interference potential is going to be less than some of the other companies.
So the question, although we've been focusing on the technical aspects of this, is in large part also administrative and behavioral on the part of the operators.
That could be part of it. When I'm looking at some of the things that have been done in those cities where the interference potential to amateur radio may be less, they've done some steps to try to prevent interference. I mean, there's no doubt that at least at one level, the industry is giving it their best go.
Is this uniform across the country, or some of the deployers are being more conscientious than others, without naming names again?
Yeah, possibly, although, for example, the Homeplug system that's out there now and is one of the Access BPL providers does notch most amateur spectrum. They do not notch a relatively new allocation giving to amateur radio in the 5.3 to 5.4 megahertz area. So in that particular spectrum, they're running full steam ahead. They have no solutions in place to deal with that. They have no solutions to deal with harmful interference if it requires more notching than their product automatically deploys. So it's hard to know how that's going to work out as we see these systems building out over larger and larger areas.
Okay, so in an analogy with what we were talking about before, about whether on the technical level it's feasible for there to be peaceful coexistence between BPL and radio operators, there's also the issue of how conscientious and motivated the operators are to work with the local radio operators to resolve all the issues.
That's correct. And what I'm also seeing is in some of these systems where they have had some successes, they've often brought in some of the factory engineers to try different things, experiments as it were, to achieve some of those successes, in some cases only partially. I have to wonder how much of the cost of doing that can be expected to continue forever.
Right.
I mean, if the only way that this can be made to work with radio users is to bring in the factory engineers that know this equipment the best and apply case-by-case solutions everywhere necessary, that could be a fairly costly deployment.
And is the problem then that if that much effort and money has to be expended to resolve these issues, that the economic viability of BPL then disappears and there's no point from a profit standpoint for the utilities to do it?
I'm not too sure how involved I could be with the economic aspects of it, but
right.
the practicality is such that so far I haven't seen that they've been able to universally take care of some of the interference problems. The only ones that are coming close are the Homeplug systems, where they are automatically notching amateur bands, so they don't have to get out there and decide how we're going to deploy this without causing interference to amateur radio. I'll also point out that many amateurs have other interests in radio. Shortwave listening is something that got many of us involved with amateur radio in the first place. Well, those systems that notch amateur radio are not protecting international shortwave broadcast listeners. They're not protecting some of the time signals used by amateur radio operators. So there's still quite a bit of interference potential that's unresolved.
Okay. Now, apart from listening to Broadband Over Powerline World and appearing on Broadband Over Powerline World and talking, are there any institutional frameworks set up now to allow radio operators and BPL operators to communicate on a standardized, regular basis, either nationally or to facilitate it on the local level?
To my knowledge, there's nothing institutional. I know the FCC has mandated a public database that at least could be looked at by people who suspect they may be having BPL interference.
Has that been set up?
No, it's not. The industry has been given a certain amount of time to do so.
Right.
I'm sure they're working at that as earnestly as they possibly can.
Okay. No, well, it's more of a legal than a technical question. What do you know about what mechanisms exist, or whether any do, to resolve these issues, or whether it's things are just going to sort of putter along here where the BPL operators say we've resolved the issues, ARL says it doesn't, that they haven't been, applies to the FCC, which says the people are working the issues out amongst themselves, and will that just carry on?
Well, I think ultimately the FCC would get past the point of saying, well, why don't you guys try to work this out amongst yourselves? I know they have in other areas. In fact, you know, mechanisms exist in other areas. ARRL, for example, has a pretty good relationship with the FCC with respect to conventional power line noise. So an amateur operator might have a bad insulator develop on the power line near his home. And we have a cooperative arrangement with the FCC where we will try to resolve that directly with the utility company. In most cases, that's actually successful. I'd estimate maybe only 10% of the power line cases that get reported to ARRL ultimately need to go back to the FCC.
So are you thinking that things might get to that level with BPL?
I would certainly hope so. We have the doors wide open. My willingness to work with this industry to try to resolve interference, to try to help them understand what needs to be done to prevent interference, has been existent right from the get-go.
What's your strategy for educating the general public about this? Do you think this is something that could become a mainstream political issue, or is it going to remain a kind of obscure a point of contention?
Well, our general interest in educating, of course, would be the amateur radio community. They're, of course, also part of the general public.
Right.
But I don't think we're going to be out there trying to rouse any rabble, getting the masses all worked up over broadband over power line. You know, it's certainly, its benefits have been discussed by a lot of folks other than me. I think I'll allow their comments to stand on their own. ARRL's concern has been that broadband over power line has a demonstrated potential to cause interference to amateur radio and other users. We have an organizational interest in amateur radio, but we've often historically provided information to some of these other users in other areas. I expect we would continue to do the same.
How well organized is ARRL around this issue?
I'd say we're quite well organized. You've probably been to the ARRL's Broadband Over Powerline webpage.
Right.
ARRL.org/BPL will get you there quicker than the full URL.
Okay.
And, you know, we've been working with amateurs. We've been working with local BPL testing teams. We've been working with some outside contractors we'd hired to do some measurements in some of the systems. I've been off doing a lot of measurements in these systems. So all in all, it's a pretty well-organized effort to properly identify the interference potential of BPL to help amateur radio operators take the appropriate steps. We certainly would not want to see, for example, any misidentified interference.
Well, what do you mean by that?
Well, there are things other than broadband over power line that can cause interference, and I know that as amateurs or have not been fully educated about this, initially especially, I received some emails or phone calls from amateurs that says, yeah, I'm 50 miles away from the BPL system and I'm hearing noise. Could that be broadband over power line? And of course, part of our role has been to identify that no, it's probably not. You have to be near it. So if we're going to identify an interference problem, we'd like to make sure we've identified the correct source, either as broadband over power line or perhaps even in some cases, it's a neighbor's vacuum cleaner.
Okay. Finally, on a personal note, does BPL generated RF interference interfere with your own amateur radio operations there?
Thankfully, no. I don't have any in Connecticut, to my knowledge, anyway.
Is that because there are no BPL deployments there?
That's correct. The nearest BPL deployment to me is up in Agawam, Massachusetts.
Okay, and that, as you just mentioned in that other case, is too far away to cause.
Yeah, this is a relatively local phenomenon. We've had reports that have been verified of broadband over power line being heard by amateur stations with good outdoor antennas a little over a mile away from the actual source.
Okay. Finally, what's your overall expectation of how this is going to be resolved?
You know, I'm not sure I have one. You know, my expectation is that we will continue to identify broadband over power line interference when it occurs. We will continue to provide information to the industry to help them understand the interference potential of BPL a little bit better. One of the things I've done fairly recently is the IEEE has formed an ad hoc working group to study BPL. ARRL participates on that group. And at the last meeting that took place in Piscataway, New Jersey, I gave a presentation to this group that explained my views of some of the reasons that measurements made with spectrum analyzers and test antennas can give you different results than you're going to see with communications receivers that are much more sensitive with much more sensitive antennas. And hopefully that kind of sharing of information might help us find at least some common ground in a process that's certainly been more adversarial than I'd like to see it be.
Okay, well, hopefully all the information you've presented here will be available. The utility companies seem to be visiting these interviews pretty regularly, so we can hope that this will provide even more communication, since this is about communication, and see if we can make the best possible use of the technology to deliver the best possible service to the most people.
Well, that certainly sounds... Sharing information is always a good idea.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing with us today.
And thank you for your time, Mark. I've certainly enjoyed it. I may not be the best interview you've ever done, but I sure had a good time.
All right, well, thanks. You're close to the top. Don't worry.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Yep. Bye bye.
Bye.